Title of the message is, Alice, Where Are You? Believe it or not, it's the only thing that could come to mind as I was, Sunday night, I was traveling, and I'll make a comment about it in a minute or two. I worked it in somehow. I'm going to read. I was asked last Sunday to reiterate a few things, and so the person that asked me that is not here, so I'll move it around a little bit. I want to read in Genesis 3, where it says about how God says about how we're not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. I'll start with chapter 3 of Genesis. And the serpent is asking this question to the woman, which is wisdom in my reality and my understanding. Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat fruit from the trees in the garden, but God said you must not eat fruit from the tree that is in the middle of the garden, and you must not even touch it, or you will die. Then I'm going to skip down a little bit further. And the man said to the woman, this is after God said, questioning him, who told you all this stuff? And the man said, the woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree, and I ate it. Then the Lord God said to the woman, what is this you have done? And the woman said, the serpent deceived me, and I ate it. I want to start out on Saturday morning. I listened to the morning shows, news shows, and on there they had a segment about the Apollo Theater in Harlem, and it was about the history of it. It was basically started for the African Americans to celebrate their in various different ways. And one of the people that they talked about was Billie Holiday. And the reason, if you haven't heard her song, Strange Fruit, it's a moving short song. It just really, like the saxophone, I mean, it just went right through you. And it's a protest song about the lynchings of the African Americans during the time of slavery. And I'm going to read the lyrics because I like how she used the idea of tree and as an idea and the bad fruit that comes from it. It's short. Southern trees bear a strange fruit. Blood on the leaves, blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar tree. Pastoral scenes of the gallant south. The bulging eyes and the twisting mouth. Scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather and the wind to suck, for the sun to rot and for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter crop. It's a sad story. It moved me and touched me so much when I heard it and listened to it, YouTubed it, and it wasn't even in just using my phone. I could not imagine sitting in that theater and hearing that song at the time in which it did. And what I like about it is, it's the idea, I shouldn't say like about it, I like the illustration and the method in which she uses it. And she uses a tree as an idea. And the tree, the idea, which was beautiful, but was twisted around to produce bad fruit. And that is an analogy that we can very easily use in Genesis about trees in the garden that produce or turn into ideas that produce either negative or good ideas. I'm going to move to a different subject. I'm going to move to a little more, hopefully, upbeat idea. There was a quote in Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. And believe it or not, I didn't really know that the message title was attached to Alice in Wonderland. But I Googled it, and by God, there it came up, and it's Google is a wonderful thing. Technology certainly helps. And it's got my mind going, and there's a quote, and this is Alice, between the Alice and the cat, or the Cheshire cat, and Alice asks, which way shall I go? And the cat says, well, that depends on where you are going. Alice says, I don't know. The cat says, then it doesn't matter which way you go. I think that's kind of how I feel standing in the center of this Genesis story, is like where I'm at right now. I could turn in any direction around and go somewhere. So I'm not really sure where I want to go, be quite frankly. I want to talk about enmity. Enmity within the duality. That seems to be where the problem lies in the story. Enmity was placed within two different ways of thinking. And so enmity is strife that is between this idea and that idea. And if you look around today, that is certainly where we're at. The duality in which we live in has a lot of enmity in it. Nobody can seem to get along. It's strife. If you think this way, then someone else is going to go this way. I say that I'm not sure exactly who put enmity in our whole way of thinking, but I don't think it's necessarily was a good God necessarily. That's a matter that maybe I'll eventually get to in my overall view of things today. Maybe not, but I have said it before. But nevertheless, this is where we're at. So I think when Jesus came, Jesus tried to take enmity out of the duality and bring it together so that different could be recognized and have some type of harmony. Different doesn't have to be, we don't have to have strife in different. But we do. Every one of us. Just look around it, from the churches to the political scene, there's a lot of enmity going on right now, a tremendous amount of it. And I heard another thing, an issue that came up. Well, I'll start with, I have three different examples. Enmity, I'll say this first. Enmity doesn't rise to the level of hatred. I don't think enmity necessarily has to rise to the point where you hate somebody. Does the fact that you're different mean that, and I don't like the way you think, have to rise up to hatred? No, so enmity is not necessarily hatred. Hatred is maybe comes out of enmity.
Yes. Does enmity mean maybe if you don't like others' ideas, maybe?
Yes, it has more to do with the perception in which you have of somebody. I wrote down a definition here somewhere. I thought I did anywhere, somewhere. It's the state or the feeling of being actively opposed or hostile to someone else. It's more of a state of mind. So you don't necessarily have to have an action and have enmity towards somebody. So it doesn't have to rise to the level of hatred. So the example, one of them was, I'm sure most of you heard, there was a football game in which one of the players took the helmet off of the quarterback and whacked him on the head. That got a little bit too much enmity to the point of violence. That's a little farther than it needs to go. I think we can be engaged and be adversaries necessarily, or you know, opponents, but it doesn't have to rise to that level. And of course, he got punished for it. Another issue was, do text messages, can we prosecute people who give bad text messages into involuntary manslaughter? There's two cases now, that one that was in which the person was sentenced to 15 months because she wrote to her boyfriend about, they had conversed back and forth, enough back and forth, and where she put a lot of negative text messages, and to the point where she told him to commit suicide, and so now she got prosecuted because of that. So here's an idea through a text message in which is This person is getting prosecuted for 15 months. She's going to jail for 15 months. Should we do that? Another case is just right now, just happened this weekend or the weekend before, sometime here real soon. In Young and Utula, they were Asian people, and one of them was a citizen and one was not. And she is getting charged too. This is an ongoing case in which she text messaged her boyfriend to the point where she said, just go ahead and kill yourself, and he jumped over the edge and committed himself. But there was also positive ones in there too. So she is getting charged with involuntary manslaughter too. Psychological abuse and verbal and physical abuse they're getting her for. So I have I'm going to get to a point back to the reading eventually. So where does freedom of speech and verbal abuse begin and end? In this case, we're texting, right?
Yes,
I think so many kids think of texting like, I don't know which program, Snapchat or something, that it's supposed to just be out there for an instant and disappear type thing. Except unless somebody captures that image while it's out there, then it becomes forever. They think that everything is now and it does not impact.
Doesn't have consequences?
Doesn't have consequences.
So, if we're going to go down this road in which a person can text message somebody and they're going to be charged with an action that they suggest, I say that's going down a very slippery slope. Because now you can go back and say, political ideas have consequences, religious ideas have consequences, and you can charge them also. What happens to a church who has an idea of chosenness and God's elect, and if you don't fit in this model, you're going to go to hell? And they judge these people to be that way. And the consequences of a person who's raised in that mindset realizes that they can't live up to the standard in which the church in which they were raised in and goes out and commits suicide. Yes, they have done that.
The thing is, each person is responsible for themselves. I had a brother who committed suicide, and the biggest thing I took away from it was he didn't think he did. And the only one that gets hurt is the family. They don't think ahead. They don't. So many people think what's happening now is the way it's going to be, especially when they're younger. I try to explain to my kids, never think of suicide, because stop and think. What did you think when you were doing this a year ago? Is it the same? Is everything the way you thought it was going to be, or has it gotten better? Changes.
But people live in the moment.
And
depression, all these things. So we're getting, I'll move it back to the idea, do ideas have an influence to the point in which you can prosecute somebody for? Now.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. If that's the case, then If I read the passage correctly, the serpent asked the question, did God really say this? So isn't that start of a conversation of a negative enmity question in which it starts a process?
Not to start a debate.
Yeah, that's what I want.
But the way you said that is something we've heard a lot of the last
what is fact, what is feeling, what is idea, what is projected thought. This is really in the play right now. How you perceive what's going on in our world around us. How do you perceive an action, a timeline versus fact? How do you prove it to be fact, and how do you prove it to be hearsay? What is hearsay? What is the results of hearsay? What happens when our leadership says such nasty things in which is coming out of his mouth that has such a negative effect in the world around us and people in general, where they give up and go out and do something, commit some kind of something? If we're going to go down the road in which text messages are prosecutable, then who is going to be held responsible? Whose responsibility is it? In the story that I read, each one blamed the other one.
But then you have ones like kids who threaten to shoot up a school or an adult that they've sent text messages. Is that something they can use to try to stop them, to put them in jail or get them mental health, you know? Or is it that they can't be used to stop something?
The power of an idea is what we're down to, I think. We have to understand the power of an idea. And you, when you utter something as an idea, like me standing up here uttering what I'm uttering, what is the consequences of that? You, who communicate to everybody, visa whatever, what is the power of that? What effect is that going to have? What are you accountable for? At what point are you accountable? Even by the laws of the land or by God?
I think you have to be really careful about that slippery slope notion, because it assumes that once you begin down a certain path, it inevitably has to lead to something. You can always stop a slippery slope
you can.
Anytime you want.
Yeah.
You're
right. The term slippery slope does not mean you go the whole way down the slope, for sure. And maybe I shouldn't use that term in the way I did, but
I'm a little conservative on this. I would have given the young lady at least a year in jail, not 15 months or whatever you said.
15 months that the one got so far.
Okay, 2 years I'll give her.
15 months. You'd have gave her 2 years. Oh, you'd have gave her 2 years.
Yeah.
And why would you come up with that?
Because I think thoughts have consequences. If you're going to send those texts, I don't care whether it's a text or whether she said it verbally. If facts have consequences, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater.
So in our present political dialogue that we're having, and with name calling and all kinds of stuff going on, at what point do you point to our leadership and say they're responsible for this negative stuff? I mean, at what point do we say, okay, that's it, that's too much? Okay.
You're looking on both sides of the aisle. It's not that a Democrat and a Republican are supposed to work together, meet together at a compromise for the good of the nation.
So we're
supposed to own individual party and their own individual petty craft and all the money that they think they can get from all these super PACs or whatever. I mean, I'm sick of the whole thing.
So all we have is enmity between this group and that group, this idea and that idea.
Yes. So, I feel like the direction you're going is like for the
And what is your comment? Is it?
I think it is.
Yes.
I think you're just as responsible or more responsible because one action had a consequence to one person, which is huge, but the other action had a potential consequence to millions of people.
Okay, so the guy that drove the car in Virginia, well,
yes, he's responsible for his own action, but is there something above him that's more responsible?
Yeah.
For me, the point of this particular scripture text is you can get away with it if you blame somebody else.
Well, they didn't get away with it.
The man says, she told me to.
Yeah, but they didn't get away with it.
And she says, the snake told me to. And
yeah, that's what we tend to want to do. We want to blame everybody else up the line or down the line or not ourselves. We don't want to take no responsibility. And that's inherent in the way we're structured and the way we're made and the way we live our life. But at some point in time, we have to be accountable. These large ideas, yes, Dan?
What are we going to do to get over that?
Huh? What are we going to have to do?
What are we going to have to do to get through?
Hopefully not war. But hopefully not war. But a lot of time in the past history, it ends up in war. And the slippery slope, I agree with Bob. We don't have to go the whole way down the slippery slope. We can come back. But it takes individuals standing up. Each one of us is an important voice to stand up and say, no, we don't like this. No, we don't like this. No.
Have you seen some of the newer reports that say that's where we're headed?
War.
An internal war. And it scares the Jesus out of me because it's the Civil War, while it had some good basis for it, it also had bad influences on either side. The idea of freeing the Negroes was great. Black people. I'm sorry, I'm not sure what the politically correct way of saying it is. I'm terrible there. But the enmity from that has continued up until present day.
Oh, still lives. Yeah.
So if we do another one for some ideology that anybody with half a mind can see is becoming radically one way or another, it could, in the process, totally destroy us. But in that case, who do we blame?
Ourselves.
We don't blame ourselves. It's her fault. No, it's the snake's fault.
At some point in time, we take responsibility for what we think and our actions. At some point in time, you have to. And then you have to voice that. I think the church has a big responsibility because we have perpetuated a lot of divisions in society. And we have. I mean, come on. If we're going to move into the 21st century, we as a church have got to change some of the viewpoints that we have. And one of them I'm trying to do is look at the Genesis text and try to see equality in the text and not the idea that woman was less than. You have to come up with, if you're going to come up with equality for all genders and all ethnicities, you have to have new ways of looking at old texts and move them ahead. If the church doesn't even want to do that, which is a large force, then how are we going to have get rid of the enmity?
I don't know. I guess we have to find out, did they really say that? Ultimately, it's up to me that, you know, that's not right behavior, you know, to do that to somebody, because somebody can be very weak-minded. But can we really accountable for that?
Well, because it's in the text, you've got to end up holding all three of those characters responsible. You, the man, you're going to have to work for a living. And you, the woman, you're going to suffer pain in childbirth.
Well, see, you're putting gender back into the text. I'm trying to get rid of the text.
Oh, well, they all, including the serpent, suffer some kind
wisdom,
of
consequence. Our wisdom suffers. There's no gender in the text. Forget the gender.
First, the church isn't supposed to get into politics at all. So if it goes to the politics side, you can't get in on any of
Well, the church not involved in politics? Is that what you said?
Our church
hasn't? Yeah, I mean, we're not necessarily, but you as an individual, can, everybody you meet, and you know, you have a voice. Individuals have a voice. We have a voice.
We don't have a separation between church and state, but there is no separation between church and state anymore. It's all mixing in together, and that's where the problem is starting to lie,
yeah.
Is our theology is mixing in with our political views, when
yes.
It should never have ever gotten that far.
That is always, to me, a very bad example, because people take the church and state and say that the church, anything to do with the church, should not be used in any manner.
I'm talking about Bible. They're taking the Bible and using the Bible and to make our laws.
Right.
That should never be.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be, well, the Bible says this. It should be what's right versus what's wrong.
And
that's what should create our laws. Now, as a person, like, I should be able to use my beliefs to make a decision. But I shouldn't, as far as a political decision, my beliefs shouldn't matter. What should matter is what's right versus what's wrong.
And that depends on the way you were raised, too.
It is. I'm not saying
but
that.
The basis for any religion is to not steal, not
right.
Do all of that stuff. So yes,
it also
so
some
our
of
laws
does.
Were originally based on that. But the idea of separation of church and state came from the fact that in England, primarily, I think, Bob was
Europe also, Europe.
They were in control of the government, the church was.
Right.
And no other type of church was supposed to exist. So when you came over here for freedom of religion, you said separation of church and state because you did not want the church controlling the state.
Right.
But that does not mean you take the values out of it as well.
No, and I'm not saying take the values out of it because stealing is wrong. That's just morally stealing is wrong. It just happens to be one of the Ten Commandments. But that, as the Founding Fathers believe, stealing is wrong. And you shouldn't steal. Thou shalt not kill. That killing is, murdering somebody is wrong. Adultery is wrong. So I'm not saying take away the Bible from the church, but like gay marriage. Why was that ever illegal? That just because the Bible, there's a verse in Leviticus that supposedly said that gay marriage is wrong, you know, being gay is wrong. That's you're taking the Bible and using it to create a law.
Right.
That's not the right law.
The
really
dangerous part is interpretation.
Right. That is the dangerous part. So like I may not believe that gay marriage is wrong, but the next person next to me will. So but they're taking that Bible verse and using it, that interpretation of what they believe to be right or wrong.
But that's what made women's problem all along.
Yeah.
Right, I know.
Men are supposed to be the strong one, and women are supposed to bow down and...
Well, if you put gender back in the Genesis, it says that your desire is going to be for your husband, and he will rule over you. So if you want to see that text as being a gender, then you're saying then you are supposed to be submissive.
No.
But that's what...
See?
I'm sure how this is coming from, because, you know, if you're interpreting that, you know, well, the Bible was written from a male's perspective, well, that means if we believe that, and which most of us, I believe, in the church probably don't believe that.
But women are.
But women should be submissive to men.
No, we don't.
But you're saying that because the Bible is written by male, and you believe that the. Oh, my train of thought.
I'm not saying that the Bible even says that.
No.
That's my point. I'm saying we tortured Scripture to get what we wanted.
Okay.
Male did.
And
yes.
That's what I'm
saying. We all say if we just bring back God back into our country, that we're all okay.
Well, which God?
Did God really say that? This brings us back. We interpret it how we want to interpret it.
Yes.
And did he really say
did
that?
God really say? Exactly.
God
yes.
Did he say that? Most people say, yeah. But do they ever look in the Bible and really read it?
No, because God has been passed.
Most time we're told.
I need to better take control of this.
It's okay. It's important that people get to say what they want.
It was the text of the day back then.
Right.
What example of your enmity is this? Next year, the United Methodist Church will probably fall apart, and over the issue of gay marriage and gay clergy, and a number of the more liberal side of the Methodist Church has said, we hope that we can divide without enmity, in effect, and we'll see what will happen. But most likely, there will be a split.
Right, there will be.
And with enmity.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And this is what's happened. I grew up in a conservative, even a conservative setting in which I grew up in the Mennonites. We split over the silliest things. Amish split over suspender buttons and eyes and, you know, what have you. The whole church, one suspender, two suspenders, you know, all of this stuff. Is a book this thick, well, real thick, of all the different splits that came over clothes and over tradition. It wasn't over theology, it was over silly things. And that's what it was. Cover your buggy and length of your covering and all kinds of stuff. Do what? I missed that one. That the women have to pin things together. They can't have snaps or buttons. Yes.
I could see a girl down the bathroom for 2 years. She was in horrible carry bathroom. A couple of them. So the boys in the hair down there for years. And we had the Amish in there. I mean, they stuffed the high heaven. They took over the. They wouldn't get a bath. You know, they got married and we gave the girl a bath. And everything I remember had to be free. And then I said, we can't do this. You have to have a regular gown. Or be able to. Oh, you can't expose anything. I mean, they would literally stand her on the bed when we were in there washing her and changing her so she wouldn't get bed sores and stuff. I mean, it was horrendous trying to deal with them and accept their faith and try to overcome them, but man, they are stubborn people.
You don't need to tell me that. Yes. So if we're going to move into the 21st century, and we're going to start thinking in terms of non-ethnicities and equality of the sexes and what have you, some of this stuff has to go. And the example that I give biblically is from the Old Testament to the New Testament, Jesus changed everything from the old to the new. So there is precedent for us to change things and to step them up in a more broader way, for sure. So in my opinion, if we want to avoid war, or certainly civil unrest, we have to be perpetuators of more open-minded ideas. Now, open-minded does not mean that you're liberal. That's only a competing with the right. An open-minded person is someone who can stand in the middle or somewhere in the middle and look on both sides and be able to communicate with both sides. That's an open-minded person. Yes, you can have staunch liberals that won't budge an inch, too. So if you think you're open-minded because you vote Democratic, yeah, that's not necessarily so. You can be as hard-nosed as the right. And I know it, everybody's like, but it's true. Okay. So getting back to what Colleen said, brought us back, was, did God really say? And I think that's a question we got to ask ourselves. What we think inside, look at inside ourselves and say, did God really say this? Or is it just my belief? We have a lot to be thankful for in this country. We can move it to a higher and better level. And I think the reason I like Genesis is because we as humanity had a beginning. And understanding the beginning of where we came from helps us understand and appreciate Christmas, Easter, and Pentecost. They are tremendous things for humanity if we understand them in light of Genesis, I think. And And I hope that through this season of Thanksgiving, that we don't eat from the tree of enmity, that we learn to put our enmity at rest. We can express ourselves differently without creating and adding to all the enmity. And maybe we should eat from the tree of hope, forgiveness, grace, and mercy. And with that, happy Thanksgiving.
Show the world your love and mercy. In your name we pray.